You're 5 miles out from a towered airport. You key up the mic, and nobody answers. What do you do? I'm Pattern on Traffic Pattern, right here on Radio Hangar, and this question trips up more pilots than you'd think. Today, we're going to break down one of the most misunderstood phrases in all of aviation regulations, establish two-way radio communication. It sounds simple, it is not, and getting it wrong can mean anything from a minor embarrassment to a certificate action. So let's walk through this together and make sure you've got it nailed before your next flight into a towered field. Before we get rolling, a quick shout out to our friends at aviationsoul.com. If you've been checking off milestones in your training, they make beautiful challenge coins for every step of the journey. First solo, private pilot, instrument rating, all of it. Great way to celebrate the wins that actually matter. Check them out at aviationsoul.com. All right, let's start with the regulation itself. 14 CFR 91-2029. It says that each person operating an aircraft in Class Delta airspace must establish two-way radio communication with the air traffic control facility, providing air traffic services prior to entering that airspace. And you have to maintain that communication while within it. Sounds straightforward, right? Call the tower, get a response, fly on in. But here's something I wish someone told me when I was training. The regulation does not say you need a clearance. It does not say the tower has to say the magic words cleared to enter. It says establish two-way radio communication, and there's a big legal and practical difference between those two things. So what counts as established communication? The Federal Aviation Administration, or FAA, has given us pretty clear guidance on this through the Aeronautical Information Manual and various legal interpretations. Let me give you three scenarios, and we'll sort out which ones get you legally into that airspace. Scenario 1, you call up and say, Riverside Tower, Cessna 172 6 Alpha Bravo, 5 miles to the west, inbound for landing with information echo, and the tower responds, Cessna 6 Alpha Bravo, Riverside Tower, enter left base runway, 9. That's the easy one. Communication is clearly established. You've been acknowledged by your call sign and given instructions. No ambiguity. Scenario 2. Same call. But this time the tower responds with, aircraft calling Riverside Tower, stand by. Now here's where it gets interesting. Did you catch what happened there? They said aircraft calling, they did not use your call sign, according to the FAA's interpretation, and this is backed up by a well-known legal ruling called the Bonanza 5-7 November Bravo case. If the controller responds to you using your call sign, communication is established. If they say aircraft calling, stand by. Communication is not established. You have not been acknowledged as a specific aircraft. You're still just a voice on the frequency. This is a big deal. A lot of pilots here stand by and assume they're good to enter. But if the controller used aircraft calling instead of your tail number, you need to stay outside that delta until they get back to you with your specific call sign. Scenario 3. You make your call and get nothing back. Complete silence. Maybe the frequency is busy, maybe there's a stuck mic somewhere. Whatever the reason, nobody responds. Can you enter the class delta? Absolutely not. No communication has been established. You need to stay outside. Now, here's where students sometimes panic. What if you have to get in there? What if that's your destination and you can't raise the tower? Well, you've got options. First, make sure you're on the right frequency. Check your charts. Check the ATS, which is the Automatic Terminal Information Service. It's easy to dial in the wrong frequency, especially when you're under the workload of setting up an approach. If you're sure you've got the right frequency, keep trying. Sometimes it takes a few calls, especially at busy airports. If you still can't get through, try calling on the other published frequencies for that tower, if there are any. Some towers have multiple frequencies for different areas. And if you genuinely cannot reach anyone, you can always divert. There is no shame in that. In fact, that's exactly the kind of aeronautical decision-making the examiner is looking for on a checkride. You identified a problem, you assessed your options, and you made a safe choice. But let's say it gets more complicated. Let's say you're doing a cross-country, and the towered airport is your only real option because of fuel. 14 CFR 9126 lets you deviate from any rule to the extent required to meet an emergency. But low fuel that you should have planned for is not an emergency you want to be explaining to the FAA. Plan your fuel properly, and this scenario stays hypothetical. Let me give you another situation that comes up all the time, especially for student pilots doing their solo cross-countries. You're approaching a class delta, you make your call, and the tower comes back and says, Cessna 6 Alpha Bravo, remain outside the class delta. That is communication established. They used your call sign, but you've also been given a clear instruction not to enter. So, you have two-way communication, but you do not have permission to come inside. This is important. Established communication is the legal minimum to enter, but the controller can still tell you to stay out. You comply, orbit outside, and wait for further instructions. See how established communication and cleared to enter are two different things. Most of the time, they overlap. The controller acknowledges you and gives you entry instructions all in one transmission, but not always. And that gap between those two concepts is where confusion lives. Now, let's talk about leaving the Delta. Some pilots don't realize that the two-way communication requirement works both ways. If you lose communication while inside the class delta, you've got a problem. The regulation says you must maintain communication while in that airspace. If your radio dies, you've just entered a lost communication situation. Squawk 7600. Follow the procedures in the Aeronautical Information Manual for radio failure. The tower will use light signals if they can see you. Green means cleared to land, steady red means give way, and continue circling. Flashing red means the airport is unsafe. Do not land. Here's something I wish someone told me when I was training. Practice identifying those light gun signals before you need them. Most towers will demonstrate them if you ask, usually during a quiet time. Call the tower on the phone, ask if they'd be willing to show you the signals during a training flight, many will say yes. And knowing you can actually pick out that green flash from the tower cab in real conditions is a confidence builder you can't get from a textbook. Let me also clear up a common point of confusion about class delta dimensions. The standard delta goes from the surface up to 2,500 feet above the airport elevation, and it extends in about a 4 nautical mile radius. But it can be different. Some deltas are bigger, some have weird shapes because of terrain or adjacent airspace. The exact dimensions are charted, and you need to know where the boundary is so you know when you're about to enter it. And one more thing about class delta that I see trip people up on check rides. The airspace reverts to class echo or class golf when the tower is closed. Many towered airports are not 24/7 operations. When that tower shuts down for the night, the delta goes away. It becomes whatever the underlying airspace is. The sectional chart will have the tower operating hours listed, and you can check NOTAMs, which are notices to air missions, for any changes to those hours. So if you're landing at a class delta airport after the tower closes, you don't need to establish communication with anyone, you just follow the appropriate procedures for the airspace class that's in effect. This also means you need to know those tower hours before you go. A student pilot who flies to a class delta airport expecting to talk to a tower and finds out it closed an hour ago can get disoriented quickly. Always check the chart supplement. Always check NOTAMs. Let me give you a practical tip for your next flight to a towered field. Start your initial call about 15 miles out. I know the standard guidance is to call somewhere between 10 and 20 miles, and many pilots wait until they're right at the edge, but giving yourself that extra distance gives you time to sort things out if the frequency is busy, if you need to copy a long instruction, or if you don't get a response on the first try. 15 miles out, make your call, have the AT's information, and be ready for whatever the controller gives you. And one more scenario, because I see this one come up on forum discussions all the time. What about flying through a delta? Not landing there, just transiting. Same rule applies. You still need to establish two-way radio communication. Call the tower, tell them you're transiting, and they'll work you through. Some pilots think you only need to call if you're landing. That's wrong. The regulation applies to anyone operating in the airspace, whether you're landing, departing, or just passing through. The examiner is looking for you to understand not just the rule, but why the rule exists. Class Delta airspace exists because there's a tower there, and that tower needs to know about every aircraft in its airspace to keep everyone safe. Two-way communication is the mechanism that makes that work. When you understand the purpose behind the regulation, the specific requirements make a lot more sense. Quick recap. Communication is established when the controller uses your call sign. Aircraft calling standby is not enough. Silence is not enough. And even once communication is established, you still need to follow the controller's instructions, which might include staying outside. Maintain communication the entire time you're in the delta, know your light gun signals as a backup, and know when the delta is even active in the first place. This segment drew from the Aeronautical Information Manual, the FAR AIM, and a few key FAA legal interpretations that have shaped how we understand these rules. If you want to dig deeper, the Pilot Controller Glossary in the AIM is a goldmine for this stuff. You can find links and more training content at radiohangar.com. Fly the pattern well, and I'll see you next time.